One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fires were burning, down the track came a hobo hiking. He said, "Boys, I'm not turning. I'm heading for a land that's far away, beside that crystal fountain. I'll see you all this coming fall in the big rock Candy Mountain."
Senator Elizabeth Warren, or as I call her, Senator Two Tails, has just lost the second of her creation myths. The first one, obviously, was she was a Cherokee Indian, but you know what happened to that. She got bluffed into taking a DNA test by President Donald Trump, and she took the DNA test, and she's about as Indian as my Papu Pete, who was born in a mountain village of Manasi in the last century. Bernie Sanders, Democratic Socialist, is least authentic. I mean, he tells you what he's about. It's about the Big Rock Candy Mountain and that song by Pete Seeger, the Wobbly song. So he's authentic. And Joe Biden, he's got troubles too. He's collateral damage in the impeachment drama, the Trump impeachment theater. His son, Hunter Biden, made a lot of money dealing with the governments of Ukraine and China while his dad, the vice president, was the point man for the Obama administration in both countries. And so that's not going to work too well long term, Joe. Your creation myth that you're just a working class kid from Scranton, Pennsylvania, I don't think that's going to work out too well. Not when you talk about billions of dollars from the Chinese government going to your son and John Kerry's stepson. And that leaves us with something. There was a story years and years ago when a man was on trial for his life and he was going to be executed then. And he said, right before he was executed, electric chair, "Save me, Joe Louis. Save me, Joe Louis. Save me, Joe Louis." It was a really poignant story, but it turned out not to be true. But right now, I can just basically hear all the Democrats in the world saying, "Save us, Michelle Obama. Save us, Michelle Obama. Save us." Because with Warren tanking and with Hunter Biden dragging Joe down and Bernie Sanders, the authentic one, having a heart attack, they need somebody. She doesn't want it now. It might turn out that I end up owing Tom Bevin that steak dinner, which I would gladly pay if Michelle would run. Because who else would be a better candidate? She would wipe the field of Democrats. And she would be running for president while the city of Chicago is building a temple of love and fealty to her and her husband at taxpayer expense. You can't ask for a better scenario than that for me. We're also going to talk about the Tale of Two Cities. Do you remember that story? That Chicago and Illinois was a tale of two cities, the poor and the rich. Well, it's really not. The tale of two cities in Chicago and in Illinois are taxpayers on one side without pensions and politicians, mostly Democrats, but also Republican handmaiden and enablers and the public sector worker unions on the other side, taking care of each other in a symbiotic relationship. And that's about to crumble with the Illinois exodus. And with the Chicago teachers rejecting a 16% or is it 23% raise and maybe going on strike, we'll talk about all this with Ted Dabrowski of WirePoints.org, an analyst and of great renown, a budget analyst here in Chicago. And Jeff Carlin is here from WGN's Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis. He's the executive producer. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune. I've got to say nationally syndicated because no one else in town is going to ever say that about me, so I'm just basically kissing my own behind. And you know where you are? In this tale of two cities with Michelle Obama out there with the Temple of Love and Fealty, maybe running for president, who knows? And the taxpayers leaving because they can't take it anymore. In the state of Illinois and the exodus, you're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
To Joe Biden. The scrappy kid from Scranton, who became Delaware's favorite son. You were the first decision I made as a nominee, and it was the best.
The Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
The other day, on a bright, sunny day, I stopped at Soldier Field, talked to Lori Lightfoot. She was promoting and helping to welcome the Chicago Fire, my favorite soccer team, to Soldier Field. And in the middle of all the talk about center backs and forwards and Frank Klopas, his goals that he scored, I did ask her about the Tale of Two Cities. And this idea that years ago, I'd hear union leaders talk about it. The Tale of Two Cities, the Tale of Two Cities. And I said, well, isn't the Tale of Two Cities really about taxpayers without pensions and public workers unions like the CTU that's threatening to strike over, they don't like a 16% or 23% raise? Here's what she said.
Look, you know, I'm somebody who believes in unions. My dad was a steel worker.
Yeah,
I support the organized labor movement. But the primary focus for this back and forth has got to be the 360,000 young people and their parents who depend upon us every single day, who go to school on reduced or free lunches, get their breakfast, get their lunch there, and creating a safe and nurturing environment for them. Obviously, teachers are a big part of what makes that happen, and the successes that our kids have been achieving over the last few years in particular. But what's really important is we not lose sight. We should all be in this for the kids.
And now joining us is Ted Dabrowski of Wirepoint. Ted, the Chicago Teachers Union is threatening a strike. Both newspapers have told them to take the deal. They still are moving the goalposts forward. It strikes me that if the CTU and Jesse Sharkey, champagne socialist that he is, were to run the city, we'd have to change the name to San Francisco or Los Angeles. The insanity is profound. I don't get it. Can you explain it?
Well, I think I can explain some of it. It is insane. The Chicago Teachers Union is known nationally as one of the most militant unions in the country. You've seen all the red strikes that have happened across the country, from West Virginia to Georgia, others. Where do they get their cues from? The Chicago Teachers Union. They've learned how to turn this into a real battle everywhere. Now, it's interesting. In some states, the teachers are really low paid. You know, we've looked at the numbers at Wirepoint, and some of the states have some of the lower salaries. And you think maybe it might make sense in some places for increases, but in Chicago, they have some of the highest salaries in the country. And even before they struck on Rahm Emanuel in 2012, when you look at the salaries they were getting before the strike among their peers of big school districts, they already had the highest salaries. So, you know, what they're looking for is, I think, incredible. But why is it happening? I think the bigger problem is our politicians have enabled them. And what I mean by that is they strike, they throw a tantrum, and what do? We appease them. And, you know, Rahm did it twice. He got rolled. He actually tried to stand strong at the beginning, and he got rolled, and he appeased them. And what they learned is they throw their tantrum, they'll get their way. And I likened a lot to, if you guys remember, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And Veruca. Veruca was the little girl. She was the one that wanted everything. Daddy, daddy, I want this, I want that. And he immediately would pull out his checkbook and buy it for her.
Hey, daddy, I want a golden goose.
Here we go again.
All right, sweetheart, all right. Daddy will get you a golden goose as soon as we get home.
No, I want one of those.
Bunker, how much do you want for the golden goose?
They're not for sale.
Name your price.
She can't have one.
Who says I can't?
The man with the funny hat.
I want one. I want a golden goose.
And, you know, that's enabling. Was she the problem or was he the problem? And, you know, most adults would look at that dad and say, he's the problem, he's enabled. And so what I would like to think here is the CTU is a big problem. But if you really want to scrape everything out, it's the politicians that are the problem. They are the enablers. Our laws enable CTU to bargain like they do. The laws enable the CTU to strike. The laws enable them to argue over things like how much sleep time kids get in class. It's gone too far. And so if we really want to point the fingers, it's the politicians who are the ones who give in, who benefit, and who work with the CTU hand in hand. That's where we need to focus our efforts.
Well, we're talking to Ted Dabrowski of Wire Points. I need to make a disclosure here. I am the husband of a teacher who has taught in the public schools. I am a father of a teacher who is a special ed teacher and wants to be a soccer coach as well. So soccer and teaching. So I hesitate because I know how hard they work, and I know how in many places, including the suburbs, they're not as well paid. But the Chicago Teachers Union would be getting, I think the average would be what, $90,000 a year?
Well, in just a few years, it'll be close to $100,000 average a year.
And that doesn't include, we say 16% increase is what Lori Lightfoot's offered, but it really...
It's 24% when you add all the steps and lanes, which are the COLAs and the salary increases.
Does the city have that money?
No, the city doesn't have that money. And it's not the city. Do taxpayers have that money? That's really the question. I'd like to take a step back of, or let's think about this for a minute.
Yeah.
The newspapers are telling Lori Lightfoot, don't cave, right? They're telling her that. And they're saying, take the deal. Well, you asked a question, does the city have the money? What did Lori Lightfoot do? In her own words, she said, quote, CTU teachers, if this package is accepted, you would be among the highest paid teachers in the country, and it will be the most lucrative CTU package in history. Now, the question is, why did Lightfoot offer the most lucrative package in history when just a couple months ago she went to Governor Pritzker to ask for a state bailout of city pensions? Right? There's a huge disconnect, and I think what's happening is here we are, we're having the enabling. You know, Lightfoot showed promise as being a reformer at the beginning, but if she's just offered the most lucrative package to the CTU and they're still flipping a finger at her, what we're realizing is that there's not enough enabling going on. They want more. And in many ways, Lightfoot already caved. She already caved by giving the most lucrative package. And this is why they behave the way they do.
What I'd like her to do in my fantasy world of Lori Lightfoot, federal prosecutor, person of integrity that I believe she is, reformer politically, doesn't like corruption, and all that I believe to be true. And I do like her personally, which is odd because I've never really, you know, I mean, me, John Cass and mayors of Chicago don't generally want to, you know, hang out together, but I do like her. What I'd like to see her do, when she said early on in her administration, I will be a one-term mayor if that means fixing the finances or getting them in order. And I can see, hopefully, I make this fantasy of myself where I see her offering all this stuff and then the CTU rejecting it and striking. And then what I'd like to see her do, and I brought this up in editorial board meetings and people look at me like, oh, really? I'd like to see her say, okay, you want to strike? Here's a check to the people of Chicago who have students in the school, children. Here's a check. Here's your voucher check for the new Trier money that I think, what is it that we spend, Chicago spends on
per student? About $16,000.
I think a little more.
Well, if you add capital and all that, but just the operating expenses.
Right. So $16,000, go to school wherever you want. You want to go to a Catholic school? Go ahead. You want to go to a charter school? Go ahead. Here's the money. Can she do that? And should she do that?
Well, I'm a huge supporter of school choice. I'm a huge supporter of putting the power of all that money in. I'm the supporter of putting the power in the hands of the parents and giving them the choice of where their kids go to school, rather than giving all that money to the administrators and the unions and letting them dictate the terms. I think that if Lightfoot were to do something like that, where she enabled the parents to say, "Hey, I'm my kids are the important ones here, and I'm going to choose to send my kids to your school if you deliver great services. But if you don't, I'm going somewhere else. If you want to strike, go ahead, but I can go somewhere else." The problem is that, you know, Lightfoot can't do that because she needs the state to do that. And of course, it's a big thing, but I get your argument. That would be the best thing ever, to empower the grandmother in the South Side, to empower the families. They have control over the money, and that's the real power, because the unions right now control billions of dollars. Imagine those billions being in the control of the people.
Imagine they had grandmother on the South Side being able to send her grandson that she's been raising to Leo High School on 79th. What about that? Wouldn't that be something, rather than sending them to a substandard public school? To send them to Leo, or to Brother Rice, to Marist. The girls could go to, you know, the many, many charter schools. I just think that that's the only way out.
Well, think about how many schools would pop up if suddenly there were parents with a voucher or some kind of education savings account in their hand. Suddenly you'd have all these customers who want a better service, and therefore schools could pop up. But I think the other important point is, if Chicago Public Schools knew that those families and kids could leave, they'd have to think about how to operate better, how to make people more happy, how to make their schools more competitive. And strikes wouldn't be one of them.
Well, right now we're looking at but as you say, you need state okay to do that, right?
Yes.
And
the city itself doesn't appropriate enough money to make the vouchers big enough. In some cases, for some, it would be big enough. But
what do you mean doesn't appropriate enough?
Well, part of the money, you know, half of the money comes from state and federal.
Right.
And half of the money, roughly, is raised locally. So for her to do a voucher with state money and federal money would be difficult, right?
She'd need clearances for that.
Or she could try to do a voucher with only the city money, which in some cases would be enough to send kids to some of the private schools.
What would that work out to be?
It's probably about, and I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but 6,000 or 7,000, which is enough to send kids to elementary private schools.
And given that there's also those state scholarships,
right,
you could twin those together, right?
That's right. That's right.
Cobble something together. There's state scholarships for children to go to those schools, and Madigan did support it. The Democrats in the legislature kept that Rauner program through with Cardinal Supich and others. You could conceivably, a $6,000 check and add that to the scholarships and.
Well, at least people have a choice, right? If they can raise either a little bit more, or they can get a scholarship from somewhere, they can choose another school.
One thing we haven't talked about is school population. There are some schools, I'm told, that have hardly any students. Do you know about this?
I do know about it. We wrote about it. It's fascinating. And the Tribune covered it well. I think, let me take a step back. I looked at the budget, you know, just prepping for this discussion, looked at the CPS budget. They have an $800 million capital spending plan. You know, that's massive. And if you look at the list of what they're going to do, it's pretty impressive, school by school, what functions are changing. And so that's a huge number. Now, to not hit ordinary residents with more taxes, they should be looking then at, if they want to modernize some schools, they should be closing down others. And there's a list, you know, this is a very interesting list of 17 schools and that we analyzed deeply. And, you know, take, let's talk about Finger, because that, you know, I was talking to somebody who went there a long time ago, and it used to be a much bigger school. A decade ago, Finger had 1,200 students. Now it has 250 students. So that means that they're only using 16% of the space. There's a list of 17 of these schools. You know, Manly High School used to have 1,200 students. It's got 114 now. Harper High School, 1,300 students. It's got 130. These schools are empty, and they no longer provide the community that people talk about. They should be closed. And not only that, if you look at their results, they're really sad. I mean, it's sad to look at the reading and the math comprehension. Those kids need to be somewhere else, in a place that's thriving. And yet, Lori Lightfoot and others are making promises in the contracts not to close schools. And that's wrong.
So who works at those schools? Do they have staff just for 150 kids, or do they have, you know, the redundancies in administrative jobs that add to cost?
Regardless, right? If you have an infrastructure, right, for 1,200 or 1,500 kids, now you got 100 kids, you know it's overstaffed. You know that you got to have a minimum staffing, or if it's not staffed well, then kids aren't getting the education they need. Now, I found my stat here. 8% of the students at these schools, so these collective 17 schools, 20,000 capacity. There's only 4,600 in them. 8% are ready for college. That's it. 8% of those kids meet the ready for college standards.
Only eight.
8%. So you're keeping this massive infrastructure, lots of costs, empty buildings, and the results are sad.
Jeff Carlin is a taxpayer in the city, aren't you, Jeff?
I sure am. It's interesting. I mean, the CTU's pushback on when they say, oh, we don't have enough staff, we don't have, our classrooms are overburdened. And they point out to say, oh, you know, so-and-so is at what school, and they have 40 kids in a class, and this classroom is 40 in a class. How does that math work when they say that stuff? They throw that out there when, like you're pointing out, there are these massive, empty, vast spaces in these schools. And is that part of the strategy behind Lightfoot saying, hey, if we give up this, you know, this, like you said, the largest, most lucrative deal ever, does that stave off a push for trying to hire more people to maybe fill out some of these other schools with psychologists and nurses, as the CTU is putting it out there?
But, you know, this is hard because it's again, more complex. You're talking about a very large geography that Chicago is trying to take care of. But let's get a couple facts out there. In 2000, right, at the turn of the century, we had 435,000 students at CPS. It has fallen by 75,000 students. 75,000 students are gone from CPS. So now we're down to 360,000. So the whole system is shrinking, right? Chicago is shrinking in population, but it's probably more dangerous at the Chicago public schools, right? 75,000 loss. And if we keep talking about a spiral that we're in with more debt, fewer people, you got to wonder what's going to happen to the student population. And so it's very risky, this whole thing of signing long-term contracts with the way CTU wants it, which is what they want, all these jobs fixed in there. They say no privatization, which means no contract hiring. They want very, very demanding things in the contract, which would hurt the system, would hurt Chicago, would hurt ordinary residents, because we're locking in costs and giving the administration no room to manage costs.
So the argument there is that like they're saying, you know, that they don't have enough people, but in those are clearly specific schools that are doing really well, or in areas where they are maybe overburdened within that, you know, those four walls. But as on a whole, it's sliding the other way. And how do you get that out there to the voters to say, hey, look, this is really what's happening? You know, because they only hear the stories because, like we talked about before, CTU is extremely well organized. We keep seeing stories that while there's no strike happening yet, and there's no negotiations necessarily on the table, but the CTU is organizing for strikes and doing training sessions for how to strike and where to go to strike and where to be visible and how to push this message out there. They keep throwing out these things where, oh, I've this teacher so and so has 40 kids in their class, but how do we prove that's wrong? You know, that's not really what's happening.
Well, so again, you know, we were talking about Illinois government and we're talking about Chicago government. And as much as I would love to say, you know, I believe them and I trust them, I don't, right? We have one of the most corrupt governments in the nation. And so there's a lot of misinformation. And I want to hit on something that's very important, I think, is why this is so hard and why we keep enabling the unions. And unfortunately, it's some of the ordinary residents, the parents, the families who are enablers as well. And here's why. There's a lot of misinformation. Most people are empathetic with teachers, right? And should be. I mean, right? My kids, I've had all my four kids have gone through public schools. Not just teachers, but police and fire, right? These are people who have hard jobs. I mean, you tell me if that's not a hard job. It's a hard job. There's no doubt in my mind. But the problem is that people can't connect the dots between the messaging of the CTU, the demands that they're making for, you know, they want more and more employees everywhere. They want more money. And it all sounds like if you're being empathetic, give it to them. But what's happening is that people can't connect the dots between all that goes on and then the multiple contracts have to be negotiated, police, fire, and it comes back to their tax bill. And when their tax bills keep going up and people are leaving now, you're actually not helping the teachers or the police and the fire. We're actually making it so that we're headed towards bankruptcy. So rather than helping the system, we're making the system even more top heavy, and it's going to collapse on itself.
Why do you think that is, that the messaging doesn't come out? I mean, my view is that most reporters are progressive or liberal, that they emotionally identify with the people in the front lines doing the work, you know, fighting the fire, picking up the dead body, teaching your children. And it's everything now in our culture is all emotion first. We're emotion driven, which is the decline, you know, long view is that that's how cultures decline. But the story is not connected. Why is it? Because the Republican Party has basically for, I guess, decades since Jim Thompson built that ridiculous fat glass building for himself up on the, you know, the State of Illinois building, that they basically have been handmaidens or helpers to the Democratic machine and the relationship with the Democratic unions.
Yeah, you know, this is a hard subject, right?
Well, yeah,
there's a lot of guilt. I get there's a lot of guilt. There's a lot of people who are falling for just the emotional arguments. Their facts don't matter right now. Data doesn't matter. Data's hard, right? So, Jeff, you're asking about these schools that are empty, and you got other schools that are full, right? What's the real situation? Could it be done in a good way that you can alleviate the problems? The unions will only protect what's good for them, and they'll message it in a way that's only good for them. And it's hard for the average ordinary resident to figure that out. And so until the tax bills get so high, until home values continue to fall more, and until people leave at a big enough amount, people won't wake up to the real problem. But they'll connect the dots at some point. And unfortunately, many of them have, right? 180,000 African-Americans left Chicago between 2000 and 2010. They said, there's better opportunities elsewhere. I'm out of here. If, for whatever reason, I don't want to blame taxes. I don't want to blame it's whatever reason they left. And that's because there's somewhere better to live.
And as a result, when you get to that point of clarity, it's already too late then.
That's the problem. That's the problem we're in. We're in some kind of death spiral, and we're making it worse. And that's why I argue that, you know, you mentioned vouchers as a potential idea for Lori Lightfoot. What she should do, and she's not going to do it, what she should do is, you don't take my offer, it's off the table, forget it. And that's it.
So you say that Lori Lightfoot should play hardball with the union.
Well, it's the same thing. As long as the daddy keeps giving Veruca salt from Willy Wonka, as long as he keeps writing the checks, she's going to keep demanding them. And until you stop appeasing, stop placating, stop buying the votes, whatever it is, they'll keep doing it. They're not, you know, all they're doing is negotiating for more stuff. It's what everybody does. It's just that they keep getting it.
But who pays? That's the point. The tale of two cities, or the tale of two states, is that you have taxpayers without pensions working two or three jobs on one side, seeing their home values decline and their taxes going up to the point where they can't even pay and they're walking away from their homes. And on the other side, you have insatiable demands, unrealistic demands from the public sector worker unions. And then you have guys who are ready to retire who want to be protected. They said, well, we gave our pension, you know, we funded our, but we paid into our pension, and now we're not going to have anything.
Yeah. Well, I think you're raising the question is, who is working on behalf of the taxpayers? Who is the advocate for the taxpayers? The bankers know how to protect themselves like crazy. They know when they lend money to Chicago or Illinois, they structure the deal so that they take care of the people who lend. The unions know how to take care of themselves. They structure every contract perfectly for them. The politicians don't defend the ordinary Chicagoan or ordinary Illinoisan. They don't. They are taking care of the unions. And this is why at some point, look, what's interesting about Lori Lightfoot, she didn't get the union vote. Preckwinkle did. So in a way, and Lori Lightfoot won big. So she's got the mandate of the ordinary residents. In theory, she should be tough and fighting on their behalf. And given what she's already offered right now, she caved already. The question is, can she, and she's got to watch out. She's got to police and fire contracts to negotiate. So she's sending a message to them about what to expect.
Well, here's hoping that Lori Lightfoot, mayor of Chicago, listens to the Chicago Way, because I know she does, because she's a big fan. I hope you listen to it, mayor, because there's a way out. It would be painful. You would not be loved by the unions who didn't support you. But you might put Chicago back on some fiscal sanity. For Ted Dabrowski of wirepoints.org, friend of our podcast and a frequent contributor. For Jeff Carlin, my co-host executive producer of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis, his triumphs echo in terms of his making that great George R.R. Martin podcast, Game of Thrones. Man, I just nerdtastically lost it all with the Great Northern Conspiracy. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board, and always thinking about the tale of two cities and two states where taxpayers are on one side leaving as refugees, and the other side is a death spiral. You've been on the Chicago Way on WGN+.